So make sure everyone got a copy, yeah. June, you're recording, huh?那就不要了，那就不要放上。因为他抄到 recording，要 record，那就关掉吧。Okay, make sure everyone got a copy. Let us pay homage to the Buddha first by reciting Namo Tassa 3 times. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. So today is our first Sutta study, in this 2015. The first Sutta study, I have chosen a Sutta from Sanyutta Nikaya. Sanyutta Nikaya is all connected with the way of practice, especially Vipassana. So since Appamatta is meditation center, so we must know how to practice correctly according to Sutta, not according to teacher. According to what Sutta say. So I choose one Sutta from Khandavaga, the book of the aggregates, named at Devadaha. And this Sutta is connected with how to discern the origin of suffering. Because Buddha said, my teaching is concerned with suffering and the way to the end of suffering. These two sentences are the whole teaching of the Buddha. My teaching is concerned with suffering and the end of suffering. Therefore, we must understand what is the origin of suffering. Okay, let's see the sutta first. Okay, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans, where there was a town of the Sakyans named Devadaha. Then a number of westward-bound bhikkhus approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, Venerable Sir, we wish to go to the western province in order to take up a residence there. Usually after a rained retreat, 3 months rained retreat, the monk will leave, will move to another place. Therefore, all these monks want to take leave from the Buddha. And the Buddha said, have you taken leave of Sariputta bhikkhus? You all know Sariputta, right? Sariputta is a right-hand disciple of Buddha. It's a top disciple of the Buddha. No, Venerable Sir. Then Buddha said, take leave of Sariputta, because Sariputta is wise. He is one who helps his brothers in the holy life. Sariputta helped his brother in 2 ways. One is material help, because as a top disciple, he received a lot of offerings. So he will distribute his belonging to other monks to help them. Another, he helps in the Dhamma. Those who have difficulties in his practice, they will approach Sariputta, and Venerable Sariputta will help them to break through break through the Dhamma and attain the noble stage. Just like Anuruddha. Anuruddha, one day, he has difficulty in his attainment of arahantship. So he approached the Buddha. He approached Venerable Sariputta. And Venerable Sariputta point out three of his weaknesses. And immediately he realized it and attained arahantship. So this is how Venerable Sariputta assists his brothers in holy life. Okay, then the bhikkhus replied, yes, Venerable Sir. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was sitting not far from the Blessed One in a acacia bush. Then those bhikkhus, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's statement, rose from their seats and pay homage to the Blessed One. Then, keeping him on their right, they approached the Venerable Sariputta. They exchanged greetings with the Venerable Sariputta, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, they sat down to one side and said to him. So when monk approached the Venerable Sariputta, they have to pay their homage, pay their respect to the top disciple of the Buddha. Because when you behave respectfully, then the Dhamma flow into your heart very easily. If we do not behave respectfully, instead we behave very arrogantly, then first the teacher will not give you the instruction. Because the Dhamma should be respected by the listener. Secondly, and as the conceit block our mind, and the Dhamma will not flow into your heart. This is very important factor that everyone who wants to pursue the Dhamma has to bear in mind respectfully. Okay. Then they said to the Venerable Sariputta, "Friend Sariputta, we wish to go to the Western province in order to take up residence there. We have taken leave of the teacher. Friends, they are wise Khatiyas, wise Brahmins, wise householders, and wise ascetics who question a bhikkhu when he has gone abroad. For wise people, friends, are inquisitive. Because the life of monk is very different from ordinary people. Monk's life, pindabat, just like a beggar, go from one town to another town, pindabat, and with bald head, without family. So this way of life is very different from the world. Therefore, the wise people will question you when they see you. Just like when I go abroad, people will question me, why you want to become a nun? Same thing. So people will question a person who behaves differently from the world. So Venerable Sariputta want the monks to answer correctly so that no criticism towards the teaching of the Buddha will arise. Therefore, the Venerable Sariputta say, "What does your teacher say? What does he teach?" This very important question. And you are the Buddhist, the same thing. People will ask you, why you want to become a Buddhist? What is the teaching of the Buddha? Why you want to follow the teaching of the Buddha rather than the Christian, Catholic, Islam, and so on? Same thing, people will question you. So the best answer is stated here. You must understand correctly why you want to learn the teaching of the Buddha. Then Venerable Sariputta said, "I hope that you, Venerable Ones, have learned the teachings well, grasp them well." This very important statement, grasp the teaching well. If you do not grasp the teaching well, what will happen? What will happen? Now, if you study in the Sutta, Buddha say, if you grasp the teaching wrongly, then you will suffer for a long time to come. You store up a lot of demerit, and you suffer for a long time to come if you grasp the teaching wrongly. And Buddha give a simile. Suppose you want to catch a snake. Which part of snake you should catch? The head or the tails? Head or tails? The head of the snake or the tail of snake? Answer carefully. You grasp it wrongly, the snake will turn back and bite you. Similarly, if you grasp the teaching wrongly, the teaching will not bring you any benefit. Instead, it will bring you suffering for a long time to come. Not because of the teaching is wrong, because you grasp it wrongly. Similarly, you want to catch a snake, catch head. If you catch the tails, it turns the head and bites you, then you suffer deadly. So Buddha's teaching is not to simply read without reflection. You must reflect why. Why Buddha say you must grasp it well, for your own benefit. In Buddha's time, there was a sati, bhikkhu. He also grasped the teaching wrongly. He said that it is the same consciousness they go round to. It's the same consciousness they go through the round of rebirths, not another, not other one. So he keep on proclaiming this is what I understand. The Buddha's teaching is the same consciousness that go through the round of rebirth, not another. So many monks try to convince him that Buddha never teach like that. You should not say like that. He said, no, this is what I understand, the teaching of the Buddha. So other monks cannot convince him. So they reported to the Buddha. And Buddha said, please ask him to come. I will question him personally. Okay, so the Venerable Sati come in front of the Buddha. Buddha say, did you say that the same consciousness go through the round of rebirths, not another? In front of Bhikkhu, in front of Buddha, who dare to say, who dare to tell lies? Buddha has psychic power. So he said that, yes, I say that. Then Buddha say, what did you mean, the same consciousness? What did you mean? What do you mean the same consciousness? And Bhikkhu Sati answered, it's the one who speaks. The same consciousness is the one who speaks, who feels, who experiences the pain and happiness in result, in the round of rebirth, experience the vipaka, the resultant of karma. This is what I mean, the same consciousness. Then Buddha say, foolish one, foolish monk, foolish one. So Buddha also scold people, see. But of course, no anger, you know. Buddha reprimanded his disciple. He said, you a foolish monk, because of your wrongly grasp the Dhamma, it will bring you long, long suffering to come. You have stored up a lot of demerits. So Buddha very directly, very openly, straightforwardly, tell him. Buddha said, no. Buddha is not so soft. Oh, my son, you are wrong. No, he said, foolish one. You wrongly grasp the Dhamma will bring you long, long suffering. Very straightforward, very upright. Honestly tell you. Just reprimand you, not soothe you. Sorry, this is not a Buddha style. Similarly, I'm also the style teacher. So please bear with me if I tell you directly you are wrong. Okay? Because I follow what Buddha style. Okay. So Buddha say, because this sati claimed the same consciousness that go around to the samsara imply that there is a self. The self that speaks, the self that feels, the self that experience the pain and suffering in life. So he's proclaiming a self, permanent self that go through the samsara. Of course Buddha will have to scolded him, had to reprimanded him because it's the wrong teaching, completely wrong from what the Buddha taught. There's a Buddha giving a long discourse. If you want to see this discourse, go to the Majjhima Nikaya, the greatest discourse on destroying of craving. I think 38. Because this is not our main topic, I'm not going to explain to you. Okay, so during Buddha's time, people also grasp wrongly the teaching. So Venerable Sariputta want to make sure, this disciple, when they travel from one place to another place, they don't misrepresent the teaching of the Buddha. Okay, and also another monk, Yamaka. Yamaka Sutta, it's very profound teaching. One of my disciples, Jewish in America, he studied this Yamaka Sutta for 10 years. Every day read, still cannot understand. Yamaka Sutta from Samyutta Nikaya. Yamaka also grasps the teaching wrongly. He said that when a monk who destroy all the things, when a monk who has destroyed all the refinements after death, he is annihilated. He is annihilated and perish away. He no more exists in the world. Is it wrong, this statement? Correct or wrong? A monk who has destroyed all the refinements after the body break up, he is annihilated, no more exist. He does not exist in the world anymore. Is this statement correct or wrong, David? Good, don't know, say don't know is best answer. So this question, I don't think you will assume it's wrong. You know, it's correct, right? It's correct. But many monks told him that Buddha never teach like that. Please don't tell like that. I said, no, this is what I understand what Buddha taught. So people, monk cannot convince him. So they went to Venerable Sariputta. Then Venerable Sariputta approached him, Yamaka. Said, did you say like that? He said, yes. Then Buddha, Venerable Sariputta asked him, do you regard, first he asked, is it form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent. Is it feeling impermanent or permanent? Impermanent. Is it perception permanent or impermanent? Impermanent. Is it formation permanent or impermanent? Impermanent. Is it consciousness permanent or impermanent? He answered all impermanent. Okay, then he further questioned him. Venerable Sariputta is very skillful in teaching the Dhamma. That's why he is called general of the Dhamma. He's very skillful. His teaching, it's very soothing the heart and very systematic. That's why Abhidhamma has come from him. Buddha taught him Abhidhamma, then he know how to put it in a very systematic way. So first he told all the five aggregates, form, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness are impermanent. He questioned him first, then he got answer impermanent. Then he further asked, do you regard form as Tathagata? Do you regard form as a monk who has destroyed all the refinements? They say Arahant. Do you regard form as Arahant? Yes or no? This one you all can answer no. Form is not Arahant, right? Then do you regard feeling as Arahant? Do you regard consciousness as Arahant? Yamaka answer all no. Then he further questioned, do you regard Arahant as in form? Arahant inside the form. Do you regard that? No. No, right? Do you regard Arahant is inside the feeling? No. Okay, so he continued to ask these five questions. Then he answered no, all no. Then Venerable Sariputta is very skillful. Then he further asked, then do you regard Arahant as without form? Without feeling, without perception, without consciousness. Yes or no? No. The living Arahant still got form, still got body, still got feeling, still got consciousness. So he said no. Okay. Then you say form is not inside. You cannot regard form as Arahant, and you also cannot say Arahant without form. So Arahant is not, Venerable Sariputta say, Arahant is not apprehended by you as real. Because you say, Arahant is not in form, form is not in Arahant, And Arahant also not without form. Nah. So your answer shows that Arahant is not apprehended by you as real. Then how can you say after Arahant passed away, he is annihilated? You cannot say like that. Because Arahant is not apprehended by you as real. Then now Arahant passed away. How can you say he is annihilated? You see, very subtle, very skillful way of answering question. And see the difference or not? Arahant is not form. Form is not Arahant. But you also cannot say Arahant without form. Arahant got form. So it's not real. Arahant is not real. Then how can you say Arahant is annihilated after death? Then Yamaka say, "Aiya," he say, "Mante, I'm sorry. Previously, I'm so stupid. I'm foolish. But now I understand. After you explain to me, now I understand correctly." But Venerable Sariputta still worry whether he understand correctly or not. So he further question him. Okay. So now, what will you say? After Arahant passed away, what will you say? To make sure he understand correctly. Don't misrepresent the teaching of the Buddha. So what will you say? What will you say? Now you understand already, yeah? After Arahant passed away, then what will you say? What's your statement? You say you understand well. So Yamaka said, this is a very difficult question. If you are unable to answer, it's also not your problem, because my student study 10 years, still cannot understand. Then he said that, so when people question you, when Arahant passed away, what should you say? Then Yamaka Bhikkhu said that form is impermanent. Five aggregates are impermanent, right? Because Arahant is is made up by these five aggregates. And these five aggregates are really impermanent. So I will answer, five aggregates are impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering, right? It's what Buddha often said, anicca, dukkha. What is impermanent is suffering. Now, when Arahant passes away, the suffering has come to the end. This is the correct answer. The suffering has come to the end. You cannot say Arahant is annihilated. Why you cannot say Arahant is annihilated? Because when you say Arahant is annihilated, you already assume there is a self. The self is annihilated, which is contradict to what the Buddha taught. You see the very subtle difference. It's called very subtle difference. So you only can answer, five aggregates are impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering now come to the end. This correct teaching of the Buddha. You do not misrepresent the teaching of the Buddha if you answer in this way. So Yamaka answer, then Venerable Sariputta says, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now you grasp the teaching well. Okay. Therefore, Venerable Sariputta say, you must grasp the teaching well. Then attended to them well. The teaching, once you listen, you should not forget. Attended to them well, reflected on them well. You must always reflect it. Not let it come in to the right ear, go out to the left ear. Then no point. Your memory must retain it and reflect it well. And penetrated them well with wisdom. Penetrated them well with wisdom. This wisdom based on practical experience. So that when you answer, you will state what has been said by the Blessed One and will not misrepresent him with what is contrary to fact. So that you will explain in accordance with the Dhamma and no reasonable consequences of your assertion would give ground for criticism. Important here, your answer should not arouse people's criticism because you grasp it wrongly. Okay. Then the monk's answer, we would come from far away, friend, to learn the meaning of this statement from the Venerable Sariputta. It would be good indeed if the Venerable Sariputta would clear up the meaning of this statement. Then listen closely, I will speak. Okay. Then Venerable Sariputta said, they are friends, why Kathiya will question you? Will question you, the teacher, will question you the same question. What's the question? What does your teacher say? Okay, what does he teach? Then you should answer in this way. Our teacher, friends, teaches the removal of desire and lust. What's your teacher's teaching? What does he teach? You should answer, our teacher teaches the removal of desire and lust. Why is so important? Then Sariputta answer you why. That's why his teaching is very systematic. Why? And we must recognize first, desire and lust is the origin of suffering. As a Buddhist, we must understand the aim to learn the Buddhism is to free ourselves from suffering. But we must understand why we suffer, where suffering comes from. Suffering is originated from desire and lust. Therefore, Buddha taught removal of desire and lust. And this removal of desire and lust is equal to Noble Eightfold Path. Same as Noble Eightfold Path. Then the other sectarian, otherwise ascetic, will question you further. In regard to what does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust? Lust for what? Desire for what? Lust for what? People will further question you. Then being asked thus, you should answer, our teacher, friends, teaches the removal of desire and lust for form, for feeling, for perception, for volition, volitional formation, and for consciousness. Why Venerable Sariputta mentioned this five? Because this five, we call five aggregate khanda, pancha khanda. This five is what ordinary people identify as self. Ordinary people identify as self, therefore they strongly cling to this self, these five aggregates. And strongly clinging is attachment. Attachment is the origin of suffering. Therefore we should remove the attachment to these five aggregates. Is the answer. Then when you have answered thus, friends, they may further question you. Having seen what danger does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for these five aggregates? You can try to answer, having seen what dangers. Without danger, Buddha will not ask you to abandon the desire and lust. Because there's danger, Buddha asks you to abandon. But what is the danger? Having seen what danger? Does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for these five aggregates? The question, the answer is very, very easy. You experience in your life every day. What is the danger? Yep. Impermanent. Let's say you attach to your body. You think your body is healthy. One day you go and see doctor, the doctor diagnose you, you've got a cancer. Do you feel sorrow? Yes or no? Sorrow, lamentation, grief, beating your heart. Why me? Why me? Why me? So why you suffer? Why you suffer? Why you suffer sorrow, grief, lamentation? Because you attach to the body, and because of your wrong perception that the body is constant, is permanent. You cling to the body as myself, at the same time you cling to the body as permanent. But permanent does not exist in the world. There's no permanent in the world except Nibbana. Except the death. But death, after death, arise again another life. So we cannot say also permanent. No, another life appear again. There's no end to it, except Nibbana. Therefore, if you have attachment, lust, desire to the body, when the body change, then you suffer. You suffer grief, lamentation, because you do not contemplate impermanent in your life. You do not contemplate impermanent of body. You do not contemplate impermanent of your feeling. That's why when your good feeling passes away, you suffer a lot, suffer greatly. You do not contemplate impermanent of your karma also. You do not contemplate impermanent of your perception. You always perceive it as permanent, as happiness, as self. And because of your wrongly perceived, things are, form are permanent, feeling are permanent, consciousness are permanent. Then when they change, then you suffer, you cannot take it. Because you always perceive it permanent. This is the danger. This is the danger. And this is why my teaching always emphasize on contemplate impermanent. If you have attended my retreat, you will know. Every time when I give talk, I always ask my student, contemplate impermanent. Because it will come to you soon, even at this moment. You check your feeling before you come here and now, the feelings already changed. But without mindfulness, we may not know. We do not know. The change is so fast. And we yet still, we always think it's permanent. Because we don't take the five aggregates as our object of observation. Our mindfulness is not applied to these five aggregates. Therefore, we do not see their change, although the change is so clear. So this is the danger. Having seen what danger does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust? For five aggregates. Being thus, friends, you should answer this. If, friends, one is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to form, then with the change and alteration of form, they arise in one sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. Some even commit suicide. Not only that, some people cannot bear the pain of body, they commit suicide. So if friends, one is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, passion, and craving in regard to feeling. Similarly, if you always want to have good feeling, don't want the unpleasant feeling, then when the feeling changes, then you suffer again. Just like when people, when first get married, wow, full of imagination. The married life, I will be with my beloved one all the time. But after married, all the good feeling changed to the painful feeling all the time. Then he suffered. Yeah, he suffered, Then finally divorce. Find another one. Find another one means that he want to find another good feeling again. He want to find another good feeling again until he suffered enough. Then he hate this unpleasant feeling. Then he try to find another good feeling to take to overcome the unpleasant feeling. So he does not know the way to escape from the painful feeling. In order to escape for him, if he feel that he want to escape from the painful feeling, that's the only way to indulge in sensual pleasure more, so that he can get more pleasant feeling. Because ordinary person does not know how to escape from painful feeling rather than sensual pleasure. This is what Buddha said. But as a practitioner, we know how to escape our painful feeling by two ways. One is concentration, forget it. Focus your mind on the breath, breathing in, breathing out, until the painful feeling disappears. This one way. Another way, directly contemplate it. Observe it, painful feeling. Put your mind in here, feel it. Unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. It's not a self. It is impermanent. It's not a self. It is conditioned. Keep on contemplating in this way. You will free yourself from the suffering of painful feeling. So every morning, after my breakfast, so much painful feeling arises in my heart. So I contemplate and then it passes away. Okay, take a break. If not, I also cannot survive. I don't know how to handle my monastery, so much painful feeling for me. So every day, give me a chance to contemplate it. The moment I forget to contemplate it as myself, I feel that I suffer so much. But the moment I contemplate it, painful feeling is not myself, I feel I'm relieved from my own suffering. So the important is quickly call your mindfulness, bring up your mindfulness, then you're free from suffering. Sometimes we forget, because only Arahant has 100% mindfulness. Now sometimes we forget to contemplate, then we suffer, especially my own practical experience. The moment I forget to contemplate, I suffer greatly. But the moment I contemplate it as not myself, suffering, painful feeling as painful feeling is not myself. The moment I contemplate it as not myself, I can feel I'm free from the suffering. And this is what I constantly teach. This is what I constantly share with my students. All come from my practical experience based on the Sanyutta Nikaya. Sanyutta Nikaya constantly teach you to contemplate impermanent suffering, condition, and not a self. So if one is not devoid of lust and desire for five aggregate, especially for the form first, so when the body change from the good health to the bad health, to the poor health, then one suffer, grief and sorrow and despair. Similarly to another four aggregates. Then when you have answered thus, then the wise Brahmin will question you further. Having seen what benefit does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for form, for feeling, for perception, for volitional formations, and for consciousness? Just now he asked, having seen what danger, we must abandon desire. Now he further they ask, having seen what benefit Then the Venerable Sariputta said, you should answer thus. If, friends, one is devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving in regard to form, forming body, our body, then with the change and alteration of form, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair do not arise in one. This is very important. The moment we do not attach to the body, so when the change arises in the body, we take it very easily. Because we already know it will change. We already contemplated the body will change. So when it really changed, so what? Already contemplated. Already get ready. So when the body change, a person without lust to the body will not be affected. Just like Upasena. I love this story very much. Upasena is Venerable Sariputta's brother. Venerable Sariputta has 7 brothers, all arahant. What a blessing. What a blessing. So Venerable Sariputta, so Venerable Upasena, his brother, one day meditates in a cave. Venerable Sariputta also around him. And he was bitten by poisonous snake. And immediately he knew that he was going to die. And he asked his Samanera, he asked his attendant to bring his body out of the cave before his body break into pieces. So when he told his attendant, please bring my body out before my body collapse. Then Venerable Sariputta heard this. And he was very amazed. He said, amazing, amazing friend. Now they already become monks, so they cannot call brother anymore. He said, oh, amazing friend. Knowing you are going to die, and yet your faculty never change. He said to the Venerable Upasena, if we, having been bitten by poisonous snake, panic until don't know what to do already, right? Because we attach to our body so strongly. But whenever Upasena always contemplate impermanence of the form. So now he was bitten by the poisonous snake. He knows he's going to die. Okay, carry my body outside. That's all. So Venerable Sariputta was very impressed. He said, knowing you know you are going to die, and yet your faculty, your complexion never change, never shake. Then Venerable Upasena give the reason why. For anyone who attached to the body as I, as mine, with craving, with wrong view, then the faculty will change when he know he's going to die. For me, long time I have contemplated. I have realized the body is not I, not mine, not myself. So why should my faculty change? This is the answer. Okay. So this one answer the Venerable Sariputta's statement. What benefit does your teacher teach the removal of desire and lust for form? So when there's a change, regard to this 5 aggregate, one is unmoved, unshaken like a firm rock. So when the so if one is devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, craving in regard to feeling, perception, volitional formation, consciousness, then with the change and alteration of consciousness, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair do not arise in one. Having seen this benefit, our teacher teaches the removal of desire and lust for form, the removal of desire and lust for feeling, perception, volitional formation, and consciousness. Is it clear to you why we should practice the removal of lust and desire for 5 aggregate? Clear? Okay. Then next, if friends, one who enters and dwells amidst unwholesome states could dwell happily in this very life without vexation, despair and fever, and if with a breakup of the body after death, he could expect a good destination, then the blessed one would not praise the abandoning of unwholesome states. But because one who enters and dwells amidst unwholesome states dwell in suffering in this very life, with vexation, despair, and fever, and because he can expect a bad destination with the breakup of the body after death, the blessed one praises the abandoning of unwholesome states. This also answers the Buddha's teaching. Buddha's teaching can be summarized in three sentences only. Avoid evil, do good, purify your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So why avoid evil? Buddha answer you. Why avoid evil? Because Buddha said, the bad destination is to be expected, and one dwell in suffering in the present life. If your mind entertain evil thoughts, you curse somebody, you hate somebody. So if you entertain even the unwholesome thought, not to speak, you put it into action to take grudge, to harm somebody. Even you have this hatred in your mind, you suffer at this moment. You suffer in the present life, then the bad destination is to be expected in your next life. Therefore, avoid evil mentally, physically, and verbally, just to protect yourself as well as is to protect others. Okay. Then why do good? Buddha answer. If friends, one who enters and dwells, although this is said by the Sariputta, but all the teaching is come from the Buddha. If friends, one who enters and dwells amid wholesome states would dwell in suffering in this very life, with vexation, despair, and fever, and if with the breakup of the body, after that he could expect a bad destination, then the blessed one would not praise the acquisition of wholesome state. If you do good and yet you suffer, then after that you will go to bad destination, then Buddha will not teach do good. Buddha will not ask you to do good. But because one who enters and dwells amidst wholesome states dwells happily in this very life without vexation, despair, and fever, and because he can expect a good destination with the breakup of the body, after death, the blessed one praises the acquisition of wholesome states. And from here, we must understand wholesome states are very important for us to have good rebirth. Therefore, when you come to the monastery, come to the meditation center, you are cultivating merits. You are doing good. You come to listen, come to perform your service. You are cultivating all the wholesome states of the mind, of the speech, of the body, which can bring you happiness in this life as well as the most important next time. Because this life, human life, is not so suffering as reborn in animal realm, ghost realm, and health realm. So even though while offering the service, you may suffer a little bit because of different opinion. To deal with people, maybe you suffer a lot. But still, that merit will support you in your good future rebirth. Don't only see this present life. What is important, we must have better rebirth. Only then we can continue to learn the Dharma. If we reborn as ghost, as animal, as hell, how to continue the teaching of Buddha? not possible. So whenever good deed you perform, bear in mind, you know, this good deed will bring you to happy destination before you become Arahant. Only then, you know, you have the motivation to do good. Okay. This is what the Venerable Sariputta say. Elated, those bhikkhus delighted in the Venerable Sariputta's statement. So this is the end of the teaching. Although it's very easy to understand, but I think need explain, then the impression will be strong. If you read in this way, soon you will forget. And you will not follow the teaching, because the imprint is not strong in your heart. Okay, any question? Sutta study also emphasizes on discussion. One moment. I think the discussion we shouldn't record. If not,